today. If I start telling you, listen, if you don't take the thing there, you're going to take it. If I show you some papers, you know, in any organization, you know that there are the papers that belong to the president and to the organization, and the government, and many things. Well, when I was in the committee there with this rule of this lease, I don't try to throw any reflections on them or anything else.
Yeah.
But they were came into this country here with practically no knowledge of life.
Yeah.
They came from Rhodes, Turkish style, in the government. Most of them didn't have no schooling. Yeah. A few had a little Italian schooling, but they were not prepared.
Uh-huh.
But when I came in here, I told you, I don't want to brag about it.
Uh-huh.
I was born, just like you are interested, I was born in every aspect of life of the Rhodes streets, including starting from Rhodes.
Uh-huh.
Leave the history behind that I know so much, of Spain and all that,
uh-huh.
and Turkey, that I have a big thing about them.
Uh-huh.
But talking about the Rhodes streets here,
uh-huh.
I came here in May the 1st of 1922. April the 30th, the last day of the month, I landed in San Francisco. I came from Guatemala.
And why did you go to Guatemala?
Okay, it's a long story. I went, the ports were closed at 1920.
1920 or 21?
20.
1920?
I think July was the last day. Because if you know the history, American history, I don't play any about American history, but I don't
know. Everybody tells me the quota stopped in 19...
There was an argument in 1919 in the Congress here
uh-huh.
that there were fracking people after the war coming in here, and they came about 1.5 to 2 million 1 year.
Uh-huh.
So they had trouble here. They were trying to organize, they were coming out of the war. They were making the factories work and all that. They wanted the people, the local people, the soldiers that they were coming back from there to give them jobs. And these people were fracking here from Russia, from I don't know. So even from Rhodes, they came a lot of them here at that 1920. So in the Congress, they passed a law. They suggested that congressman, I can't recollect the name, I have written down somewhere. He recommended, and he won. He passed it through Congress. Why don't we close for 4 years the doors
yeah.
and try to assimilate the ones that they are here now?
Yeah.
Although it's a melting pot.
And that's what happened.
But with this here, with the havocs that they play in the war in Europe and all that, you're going to have here 5-6 million. How are you going to take care of them? So they closed the doors for a while.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't reopen it in 1924. At that time I was in it, you know. I wanted to come. Why did I want to come? I told you the story of your reality. Maybe if you come in another time, I'll finish, continue the rest, you know. It's good to know.
Yeah.
Because I got more here
uh-huh.
and in writings about the Sephardic community here than anybody else.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the context.
Yeah.
And the arguments that I saw amongst people and what it is and what was drifted, the whole thing, I know more. Being that I...
To Guatemala, though?
Yeah.
Was the ship went from Rhodes?
No. I went to Mexico.
Uh-huh.
I went to Mexico. Uh-huh. I left Istanbul. I was 1 year in Istanbul. I left my brother. I said, I'm going to America.
Who did you have in America?
Huh?
Do you have relatives in America already?
Yes. I had the girl I loved.
Uh-huh.
Was...
In Los Angeles?
Was a sister, it was a first cousin to Joe, to your grandfather,
uh-huh.
and a first cousin to Victoria. I told my brother, my oldest brother, I'm leaving the business here in Constantinople, although I was doing good with him.
Uh-huh.
He was in the import-export business, good business. I said, I am going to, I've got to go to Mexico. I went to Veracruz. We had, my brothers had some neighbors, women, school teachers, mm-hmm. French. Says, if you went to Mexico, says, one of the others to see my relatives, and do you need anything, they're going to, I was a young man, you know, 19 years of age.
18?
19. I was to Mexico. I went to Veracruz.
Mm-hmm.
I went to France. From France, I went to Veracruz.
Mm-hmm.
As I set foot on the ground, there was a revolution.
Ah.
Everything came wrong for me. I went for a revolution over there. And I made an old Jewish fellow, an ambulante, you know what ambulante means? He says, close from house to house.
Ah.
And he told him, I said, the trains aren't running. He says, no, the trains are not running, go up to Mexico City. He says, it's a revolution. He gave me the name of all the generals, and I have them all written down. I got everything, the story. I stayed there one day. I heard a couple, they were engaged, and were going to go to marry, to go to Guatemala, because the girl's two brothers, they had a nice big business there. And he told me, that fellow suggested, he says, why wait here until the revolution is over? It may take a month, a year, or what? Go to Guatemala with your friends. Stay there for a while and then turn back and come to Mexico. I said, I'll do that. So we went to Guatemala on a train.
Mm-hmm.
The moment they received me over there, there was about a dozen businessmen, Jewish people, Sephardi,
mm-hmm.
from all over. In fact, one of them was very smart, was from Tahiti, that he came over to Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
It was a beautiful country. A lot of money to be made.
Hmm.
And I noticed I went to a house, they received them one night, we went with the train, you know, from Mexico. They received them, and one fellow came up, he says, Isidore, he tells the fellow the house we went to, which this girl and her sweetheart are going to stay. He says, we start talking, telling where we're coming from, over there. He says, I want this guy here. The other fellow says, I want this. So the girl that was supposed to marry them, she says, no, Isidore, he tells the brother, says, no, Peter, which is me, Perahia used to call me, he's going to stay with us. The brother says, well, I got, somebody has to get somebody, some of those merchants came in. Says, no, no, there was other people. Says, no, 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 she's like a brother to me, he says. You're my brother, and he's like a brother to me, he's going to stay with us.
Uh-huh.
Well, we stay with him. And I learned the trade. I was at the banana plantations. You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
The United Fruit Company.
Yeah.
Thousands of acres. It was exclusive American.
Mm.
But I spoke English.
Yeah.
Because I went to an English school in 1913 mm-hmm. in Turkey. Because in Rhodes there was no English. And I was eager to learn English.
Uh-huh.
I knew French, I knew Italian, I knew Spanish.
So how long,
I knew Hebrew.
How long did you stay in Guatemala?
One year.
And you took a boat out to San Francisco?
That's right.
And from San Francisco, you had nobody, huh?
Nobody.
Nobody?
In Los Angeles, I had somebody.
Okay.
When my sweetheart...
You arrived in L.A. in May 1st, 1922.
That's right.
That's
right.
That's when you arrived in Los
Angeles?
That
was a week after Leon Bero's son was born. I was at his... I came back the morning, Sunday I went for the milah, what they call it, the circumcision at his house, and I made a lot of turquinos.
Now, when you came to L.A., they had the 17th in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they had they only went to 17th in Georgia, not for the Friday night services.
No.
Where did they have Friday night services?
No, it was a hall. It was the old neighborhood. I used to belong to that member. I the member with the Yiddish.
But that was only for
the
like
vice
high
president.
Holidays?
Huh?
Only high holidays.
Holidays and sometimes it was Saturdays. I said I never went much. I'll
uh-huh.
tell you the truth.
Uh-huh.
But I knew the hall there. I went in.
How about the Friday night service, Saturday morning service?
You
where
remember
where would
that
be at?
That I don't remember. Oh, we used to do. We used to go. Some of us used to go to different units. Houses where they go.
Mm-hmm.
There was one that you mentioned in the book, Tio David Tovi. You mentioned that his name.
It's
on Maple Avenue.
Uh-huh.
I went to him.
Uh-huh.
And the comunidad, they had something somewhere. Well, I wasn't very much interested, but if I come to the point, if I want to leave all this behind, the first day I came to Los Angeles. But through a lawyer in Guatemala,
uh-huh.
through a Spanish teacher at the medical school of Guatemala. If you never heard of it, Guatemala has the best of all the Spanish-speaking countries. They have the best medical school.
Uh-huh.
He was appointed, Fernandez his name, and he was Spanish, and I told him I was Spanish, you know, that we got acquainted. He says, I'll get you well. I had the malaria. Sleeping sickness, I used to take like quinine. When I went there to the, what do you call it, this place, the camp where, it's never camp, but the United Fruit position, properties, all that. They had millions of trees of bananas, and they had the people, you know, I don't want to go and tell you how they cut them, how they cultivated, how they ship it and all that. I was all in interested because I was interested. There was 15,000 Jamaicans with flat-nosed Jamaicans, and there was 35,000 natives. Now, with the natives, I know the Spanish. Uh-huh. But with the Jamaicans, I saw they were better spenders and could speak in the way English. First time I saw black people, I got along with them. I sold the merchandise. First month I made $800. Huh. I swear to God. Little boy, I was merchandise. And I keep going every month. But in the rest of the month, I used to go to the French hospital. The nuns, they had a big school, French nuns. They had the Italians first, you know, because Guatemala was composed mostly, the ruling class composed English, Germans, French, Italians, and Spaniards. Each one in a different line of business. Then I started breaking in, going into the coffee plantations. They had about 300, 400 people working there.
Uh-huh.
And that was owned by Germans. I used to go in there. We spoke French. Then I went to department stores to buy merchandise and get acquainted. Department stores were Italians. I went to the French. I went to the English. The banks were the English. I spoke English. You see, I mean, I'm trying to give you that. I got in there. I told and wrote to my sweetheart. She was the only daughter in the family. Her father was here. She sent money to them.
Mm-hmm.
To the mother to come here. She didn't want her to spend the money. She didn't want to come first, second. The third time she told me, says, if you don't come back, forget me. The girl told me about it. I said, never mind. I was in business already.
Yeah.
I was going to Istanbul every 2 months. Drinking. I used to specialize on bringing paraffin. What do you call this here? Whatever we use for the moths, you know, naphtha. You know what naphtha is? N-A-P-H-T-A, naphtha, naphthalene.
That's
all right. I forgot. I know the word. Whatever it was doing in the closet for the clothes, for the moths.
Oh, that stuff. Naphtha.
They used to bring from Germany to Turkey. And they used to bring a lot of it to Rhodes. I used to bring hazelnuts. I used to be whatever I found, and then stationery from Germany after the war that was left there. I used to go in the places and buy stuff and bring it over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He bring it over to us every 2 months. I used to go back and forth. So I told her, I said, I'm going to leave my business someday, but give me a little time. You go to America and you wait for me. And she did. She didn't wait for me.
In Los Angeles?
Sure, in Los Angeles. Lyron wanted her. And close your... I heard even your uncle, your grandfather, Joe, wanted the girl. She says, no, she keeps him. Until one day the father and mother had arguments and discovered a letter that came in from me. That I was leaving the business and I was going to go to America to wait.
Uh-huh.
She waited for me. And she kept saying, I'll wait for him.
Uh-huh.
And I came, we got married. You never knew my son, David Alhader.
No,
he died in Normandy as a paratrooper.
Oh.
You know my second son, maybe you heard of it. I showed my picture, your father, with my son. They were very close. They went to Benoit school. They were in the ROTC. Your father was what, a captain? Lieutenant or something there in the ROTC. My son was a corporal because he was a year and a half younger.
Uh-huh.
They were very close friends.
Well, what kind of work did you do in Los Angeles?
A lot of things. I sold stationery.
here in Los
Angeles? I said, yeah, for a while I would try it.
What is
I went in the market, in the business.
What kind of market?
Market.
Produce?
Produce market.
Uh-huh.
Then from produce market I went into the wholesaler, and then I went into the farming. Not the farming, I didn't do no farming. I had the farming. The Jewish people don't their hands in the soil. I had farmers, the big farmers. I said, tell them, I say, you want to sell merchandise? You plant me 30 acres of this and 20 acres of that.
Uh-huh.
I made a contract with a lawyer. I'll take it. I'll be the seller.
Uh-huh.
I used to go down to the chain stores. I sold a lot of stuff to these chain stores here and to shippers.
Okay.
I used to take the job for many people. Well, I mean, that was my nature.
Uh-huh.
So I retired when I was in 1965. I was 10 years in Canoga Park.
Uh-huh.
They had a big farm until people start coming in and raising children and all that. They used to come at night in the fields. It was terrible. Then we moved to Riverside County. Then little did I know, when we moved into Riverside County, we have ourselves both there and sometime at the winds.
Uh-huh.
I went through it for 5 years until they couldn't anymore. I told my wife, I knew the month they're going to come, I knew everything else, and it was real hard, you know. I used to work day and night between the wholesalers. I sell the stuff in the morning here to the wholesalers. I go to their office, get the phone, call up the farmers, mm-hmm. far away. I say, pick me so many so on that. And pack them.
Hmm.
You know, it was business. I quit in 1965.
You know, questions I'm concerned with now is with when you started getting involved with the temple.
I'm going to tell you
with
that. That is why we interest you. The rest is personal. I mean,
no, the rest is good too, though.
Well, and this year, it's true that if you have a seat down here, you know, there was not a day in my life that something I didn't tackle or nothing happened to me. That's why I was 32 years of age
mm-hmm.
when I became president of the Hebrew Center, the old family. 32.
Hmm.
They said, what the hell, this man is going to, is God going to lead us? They appointed me, unanimously. I got the record here, copies of the records, unanimously. And I promised that if you nominate me president, at that time I have lost my wife and a child's birth.
Oh.
My friends told me, says, Peter, in order to forget, says, get involved in the society. They appointed me for president, nominated. I drew a plan. I said, I'm coming here to help for you. I work in another organization in Rhodes, but it's not going to be a failure for me. I commit harikiri, Father, accomplish what I want. I changed the name of the club. I'll tell you how we changed the name. I call it the Sephardic Hebrew Center. I built a temple with the help of your grandfather. I got the records, I got the books, I got everything here. There's no joke about it.
Oh, yeah.
3 years I was president, first time in our society.
3 years?
3 years president.
Who was president before you?
John Mayo. Oh. I'll show you his letters and his words.
Uh-huh.
The tricks that he played and how the obstructions that he put in the building of the temple. Oh, listen, there was fights. And in those fights were your grandfather. Joe Hudson, I give him credit, but he lasted all this long with those arguments and fights and all that. But I wasn't the type of the young man. I was Rudy Slee. But in my thinking and all that is not Rudy Slee. Because I mingled with Italians, with French, with Spanish, because of the languages, with Armenians, with Greeks, because of the language that I speak.
Were you there when purchased... Yeah, you were there when they purchased the land.
Which land?
The three lots.
Over where? Yeah.
55th and Hoover.
55th and Hoover?
Mm-hmm.
No, I wasn't. That I came after.
Uh-huh.
I came after.
How long did they...
They bought that lot. If you ask a lot that they've been talking about building a temple for 17 years, and I built it in 1.5 years.
Uh-huh.
I went around to the biggest guys.
How come
you want to see the thing, don't you?
Well, tell me about it, and
yeah.
Then we'll pull it out.
Yeah.
But what, how did it get started? Like, whose decision was
Well, a decision, I'll tell you.
What were the problems?
They were all figuring, they all had in mind to have a temple. But they didn't have a fellow with guts and knowledge to go through with it. because our society didn't have no money. You're talking about that lot over there. It was bought for $16,000.
Uh-huh.
They paid about, by the time I came in here, they paid $6,000. It was all $10,000, I think. This, whatever the Hoover Street is.
Uh-huh.
They had the social hauling thing was the old B'nai B'rith. The old B'nai B'rith had it. It was worth $4,000, something like, finally to $6,000. When I came in, I said, we're going to sell that here. We're not going there. We have a little shack, a store, in front of this lot on 55th and Hoover. You heard of it, probably. We arranged it to him. But we've been going to different halls to have our affairs. At my time is when the movement started. The youth started. I got all the men that came from Rhodes and put them in commissions, in the, what do you call it? In committees. Ten committees. Or entertainment, this and that, you know, all everything. Get all together, get the women. The women were just like in Turkey, you know, at the time when I came in here. Women sit behind, they don't know the 50s. The men were doing everything. I said, no. We're going to have a share of this business here to the women. I'm going to show you letters from your grandma Victoria they sent me. So, it so happened that the, when we come, when they came that, I said, we're going to sell that property.
Sell it?
Sell the hall, the old B'nai B'rith on 17 in Georgia.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine with me, Dr. Robert Benveniste, you know him. He's an old man. He says, my man, he says, everything you're talking is all so fantastic. He says, how did we do that? I say, hold on. It's business, it's religion in it, and it takes guts. So I said, I told the committee we're going to build a temple. Well, we got no money. We started, I got the records here, partly with copies, when they gave me that they left for us. All, nothing that they left in society, transfer, all the archives, you know, you may call it. Transfer to me, well, oh, reading this, a paper for this and a paper that, well, what is the name of the baby? What's the capital? I think it was $600 a head in the bank. At that time, a dollar was a dollar. What am I going to do? I said, we're going to build a temple. I told everybody. We tried throwing parties. You know, we tried to do, we start throwing big banquets. Mm-hmm. Different thing. And we told the women to do banquets.
Mm-hmm.
We bring a little money, not very much, but a couple thousand or so. It dawned on me, I said, some of the Turkinos have where they're banking. Somebody says, see, they're all banking, says United Union Bank. Oh, I'll find out who's Union Bank. Mr. Ben Myers, brother to Louis B. Mayer. Oh, I said, we're going to hit the card here. The joke, I don't tell everybody what that thing is. I went on there, I presented it, Mr. Ben Meyer, somebody wants to see. As far as the Jews are going to come in here. I took that Robert Benveniste and Jack Notriga together. Jack was getting puzzling, but they had your heading us to. I went in there. Your father, your grandfather wouldn't bother him because he had his store in 8th Street, was it? 9th Street, that, wow. But it was a good old Joe. He was a right-hand man for what we wanted. Like he always told me, says, Peter, he says, I like to do the, what do you call it, mandadicos, you know. When we want anything in town, errands. Now, Joe, go over there and go to see this and see, take care of this and take care of that, you know, he used to do. We appointed him vice president, too, and appointed him chairman of the Kielako.
Why him chairman?
Chairman de Gila. Well, because I like him, because I could trust him, because I know he was going to build a temple and he would be the right man to look after everything. He was there every day. Every time they nailed something on the wall, he was there. And if anything went wrong, like he did once, he came to me. He says, Joe, says, Peter, says, the Azara for the women and the hall, they extended a little too far out and made it dark underneath. I called him and I said, listen, either I'm going to cancel this for you and you're going to straighten out. He says, if I cut the arms, it's going to cost me $300 at that time. A dollar was a dollar. I said, let it cost you, says, but this building here, I said, when it's finished, I'll give you the key for 6 months. You show the world what you can build. And then, you know, years after, I saw him over the bed one evening, and you know, Peter says, I haven't seen you for a long time. He says, you know, that time that you gave me the key to show the people what I can build, he says, was my turning point. Hmm. I say, Max, I told you. It's not me. Something was telling me, my brains, you know. Well, so I went in there and I talked to him. I showed you his letters.
Uh-huh.
The paper. You want something?
Sorry. No.
You want to sit down here?
No. Huh? I've got one piece of information on the
Well, of course you want other information besides that.
Okay, yeah, but I'll
show you. But all I wanted to tell you, when I came in here, I made that paper. The first man I made was your grandfather.
This talks about the temple, when it was built. The Stucco Zimmer Construction Company.
I got the contract here.
746 has been awarded the contract for a two-story, five-room synagogue, social hall to be built at 55 South Hoover.
That's right.
Spartacus Cuba Center. Plans were prepared by architect Edith Northman.
And let's see. I'll tell you. Who do you get this from?
From the book. Southwest Builder and Contractor book.
Southwest Builder and
Contractor? Yeah, it's from 1933.
Oh, right. For 2-story, 5-room synagogue, the social hall to be built at 12 rooms over. It's part of the interceptor. Plans were prepared by architect Edith Northman. I got it here. West Pico Boulevard. It's got an area of 283 by 130 feet and will be of frame and stucco construction, mission roofing, leather glass, ornamental iron, wood, and treated wood. That's right. I got the whole thing here. A fine metallic floor kitchen equipment and roof. It's to be built for $25,000.
Is that correct? The estimated cost was that much?
Yes. Uh-huh. That's right.
Okay.
That's besides the...
The land.
No, that's besides the furniture.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the land also, naturally.
Uh-huh.
Concrete and brick work, plastering, and helping to work at the store. That's right.
Okay.
So, constructed gymnasium.
When was the, how did the building go? I mean, you started the parties to collect more money.
The building, well, I started. I went to the bank. You came and start building.
So you got a loan?
But I had the contractor, Mr. Max Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
He was an Austrian Jew. He's still alive.
Mm.
He's an Austrian Jew. He came out of school, college, and he had built one market. So far, one market he had built. And that was Savings Center Market, which later on I had that market. And your grandfather, Aaron Binnon, I sold it to Aaron Binnon, the produce department, on Slauson and Western Avenue. He says, well, that's your own building this year, but our type of building would be different than the temple. He says, well, I can do it, but I fell on his sincerity. He came to my house many nights. Some of the committee weren't pleased. We decided the person that will back him would be a lumber company. I got the name here. I'll give it to you later. And Glickman in the company. So we figured he gave us the plans, and we were going to build the temple. This temple was not supposed to be what we built. Lo and behold, we had the plans with the man. I say, Max, how much you want to build this year with the specifications we wanted? Moorish style, we told him. Better looking than the one we have now in construction. I mean, in the style, because this is modernistic.
But the
other wasn't. You ever been there?
The B'nai B'rith Lodge was...
No.
It was very...
No, but it was a hall. Was
that
a plain
was different
hall.
Now, huh?
Oh, sure. I'm talking this one here on 55th and Hoover.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful one with different material.
Sure.
It was Moorish style. It's not modern like this here. This is beautiful. I'm not getting it wrong.
It's modern.
It's modern. Yeah. This was most religiously like built.
Yeah.
And he got to it, you know, he learned, the fellow. He says, I want $20,000 to build it. I look in the eye and say, Max, if I give you $20,000, I mean, not me, the society, the committee, if we give you a brother committee, and they were all favored me, you know, I say, if we give you further, I was trying to trap him, you know, to be sure of what he's going to do. I say, if I give you $20,000 for the building, and I give you the key after you finish, because you haven't built anything in Los Angeles, and this is Depression time, beginning 1933. Ours was the only building in Los Angeles at that time. I said, if I give you this, I'm sure, I say, you're going to make all your efforts and watch close enough what it's been doing over here. And besides, I say, if we get the loan from the bank, they're going to be alive on your neck. You'll be breathing on your neck, I say. He says, I swear, says, I'll do it for you, period. For you, for your people. I like this for the Jews, you know, all that stuff. We do the plans. All of the whole, lo and behold, somebody comes to the temple. Well, I think it was in 48 in Vermont, second story building, a little menorah hall, I don't know what they call it. We rented it for hot holidays. Somebody, Albert Notriker, you know Albert Notriker? Jack Notriker's brother?
Oh, yeah.
Immediately is in the kitchen. Albert Notriker came in. No, it was Nissim Franco. You know Nissim Franco? He's a member of our temple. She's a... He had a shoemaker in Hollywood, near Vine Street, I think it was. This man drops in there. No, says, I'm a stranger and all that. Where are you from? I'm from Shanghai, the man said. Who are you? What are you? I'm a Sephardic Jew. He says, I'm really sleeping. Then I start talking in Spanish. He says, I'm looking to the water temple. Now the comunidad had a temple. He says, I'll take you there. I told you. He built him a temple. Now at that time you were buying, whoever bought the Sefer Torah, the opening of the doors and all that was the committee. The other people, they either weren't as much interested or probably they didn't have it, whatever it is. We used to buy our mizvot $60,000 to $75,000. I used to buy one because I'm president. The next fellow's doors had to buy one, you know. We bought some of the mizvot. It was a little money. And pretty soon they called. I was just a member that I went there. Mm-hmm. They called this man to the Sefer Torah. He came in. He said the bracha, said the shkava, you know what the shkava is mentioned, the memoriam of the entrance. Donation $250. Everybody was crazy. $250, who is so $250? Not much, you know. New immigrants and all that. From then, I became president. I approached the man. His wife was graduated from Constantinople. She knew her English. She knew her French perfect. She was going to German school, I think, at that time when she graduated, and Castilian, and Turkish, and Greek. You never met her, did you? Linda Cohen?
No.
Brilliant. When I tell you brilliant, brilliant. We hit it right with him. I talked to him and I told him, he says, what are you people doing? I said, we're building a temple, we draw the plans with a work. I told him, we never know what Hoover Street is. And he said, what are you going to build? He says, let me show the plans. A man is a big businessman in Shanghai. He had 10,000 rickshaws. He controlled the whole rickshaws, which is taxis. and he had a big factory. He had 200 men working in it, led the factory. He was sick. He was coming here to be cured. He used to go to Vienna. He used to go to Berlin. They sent him from there here. Mm-hmm. Then finally they sent him here to the Simpson Clinic in Santa Barbara, which is famous in the United States. I don't know if it still is here or there or not. I brought him the point, you know, he was a Turk. I mean, a few words, serious.
What was his name?
Abraham Quinn. Born in Constantinople, went to Shanghai and became...
His family was not from Rhodes then?
No, none of them.
But Linda Cohn?
But Linda Cohn
was from Rhodes.
The wife. When he went second time to visit Constantinople, he made the girl and married her.
But she was from Linda?
No, from Constantinople.
Oh, okay.
Both to Constantinople. So this man came around, I showed the thing, you know, I knew because I spoke Turkish. I met a lot of Turks in my life because my father was a tax collector in the Isle of Rhodes. Mm. You know, in the Isle of Rhodes, my father was tax collector. Mm. And come holidays, you have to go to visit the governor and bring the children with. And a lot of the officials used to come to my house. I was a little kid. Mm. Well, I got into it, although I was a Latin. Mm. We went to French school. So, I knew him, his act and all that. So he said, let me see them. He looked at them, the plans, what we're going to do. How much is it going to cost? He says, $20,000. He said, plus the land that we have is not paid. We owe another $10,000 in the land. He pushed it around with the back of his hands. No, he says, you're going to build something of $150,000. I swear to God. I start sweating. I say, Mr. Cohn, we only have a piece of land in the neighborhood that is near as prominent. How can you put $150,000 in all that? You bring me some other plans for $150,000. The men are millionaires. We went around, I went to the committee, I told the committee they couldn't believe it. They all went crazy. I say, we're going to do something. We're going to bring some more plans. I say, before we start playing, we have to talk about land, change the land too, sell this and buy something somewhere else. I went one day, he rented a home. When he went here to stay in Santa Barbara, then for a month, then he used to go back to Shanghai, you know. He rented a nice home in Santa Monica, not facing the beach, but a block in, with his wife. And he told me to come on a certain day, was it a Wednesday or Thursday, I swear I don't remember, at 10 o'clock. I said, all right. I go there and I take Jack Matrika with me to explain to him, if he's going to go back to Matrika, what are we going to do if we start to buy another piece of land somewhere else? What are we going to do? I told you a lot of things went against me. Me in the committee, when I talk about me in the committee. I walk night to know that I got a knock at the door. Mrs. Linda Cohn comes to the door crying. I say, what's good morning, Mrs. Linda. I know you have an appointment. He was waiting for you. He says, he just died 15 minutes ago. He says, go and touch his pulse and see. He says, his blood is still warm. Oh, my God. What are we going to do now?
Wow.
But I took it on her. I spoke to her. She says, I know you people, you've been having so much. I know he mentioned to me that he's going to help you people. I know this. I know that. She says, I don't know. She says, we'll see now. Look here what we got. Now we have to decide how we're going to bury him. They came from the comunidad, this fellow Amado. You heard Richard Amado? His uncle, Morris Amado. His father has died, Morris Amado. He came in, somebody called him, he came right to the house and brought another guy, and they start talking. He wasn't king to the Stambolis, his own people. He was king to the poor Rudislis, because they were good souls. He said it. I like the Rudislis. He told me. He was not going to give money just how when the other followers were trying to draw him, you know. but he figured the Purush was a Rudy Sliss. What he heard from us and what he saw in the Kila, it was down to earth Jews. So, and I had an argument with that fellow. And he was a rich man, I wasn't, I was a young man. I said, I couldn't, like I said, oh my God, I got that Italian in me. I am going to, because I was raised as an Italian. I say, I'm going to get even with him. I told Mrs. Cohen, we're going to bury him. We're going to do all the services. At that time, we had ways of doing services, you know, washing the body. We had all that ourselves. Mm. So he told her, she says, Mr. Alhadis, please, he says, let him bury him over there. And you do all the services. She started crying. Finally, we accepted that. He's buried with the Stambolese, but the crowd that came to the funerals were Rudy Sliss. The speech was made at the funeral was by me. It was Rudy Sliss. They kept their mouth shut, the Stambolese. They kept their mouth shut. And then we did everything right. Then she came to me. She says, I'll do all I can, and my children, because my husband promised me. She came here, she went to us, we start. Then we went back to our promise, we start building. We build it. Told Joe, you open your eyes and watch there because you're close to the building, because you're downtown and watch every day. Good guy used to go there. Watch and see that everything is there. If anything goes wrong, call the committee, call us. You know, we all gonna get together. And then that was the time when he told me that the canopy, the gallery was a little too far out. The old women were underneath and the younger women on top, but it was too far out. It darkened the place.
So who actually, so they contributed money?
True. She started contributing $1,000 at the time, every time she wrote. I got all the correspondence, copies of the correspondence. Mm-hmm. She gives as far as $5,000. She says, Mr. Alcade, when every time I'll be in Los Angeles, I've been contributing. My children are growing. They were the two sons. Well, Daniel, you know more is Daniel. Mm. And Nino, his older brother. His name is George now. Mm. He says, they are in the military school, which I knew. He says, when they grow up, they're all going to contribute. From year to year, they're going to contribute to the temple. In the meantime, the old people have to contribute. Don't leave it to us, he said, altogether, which it was wrong. All of a sudden, she writes me a letter. The communists are coming. A lot of the European banks in Shanghai closed up. It doesn't touch us, it says, because we didn't have any money there. She started transferring the money over here, whatever it wanted, whatever she could do. The communists came in. She closed the factory. She closed all the government, took everything. She came in here, but she brought a little money. Still, her mind was here. She became a member of the Leaders Auxiliaries. She used to make good speeches for them, our Rudy Sliss.